No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast, our Arizona Cardinals show with insider and outsider perspective. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, one of the USA Today NFL wire sites covering and focused on your Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals team site, and also one of the hosts of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how is everything going as we're recording on a Tuesday night as always?
It's nice sitting here with the windows open. Enjoying the weather. I think that's about the extent of the enjoyment.
Yeah, because this isn't gonna be the happiest podcast. This is gonna be not so pleasant because the Cardinals did what we said they better not do, and they went and laid an egg in Buffalo. It was a part Cleveland game last year, part Carolina game in the playoffs. It was just very disappointed. They got off to a slow start, couldn't stop LeSean McCoy, couldn't stop Tyrod Taylor in the running game, then tried to rally, then had a bunch of turnovers, and in the end, a 33-18, very disappointing, very embarrassing loss on the road to the Buffalo Bills, who were previously winless, had just fired their offensive coordinator, were playing without Sammy Watkins, playing without Cordy Glenn, playing without Ronald Darby. So, tonight's show is not going to be it. This is, if you're a Cardinals ranter, if you like to pick apart, this is one of those shows that you can listen to and feel satisfied. Even I, the eternal optimist, there's not much, there really isn't a whole lot good to say. Before we get started, though, we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about some of the roster moves that have happened because there's been a little bit of news. We're going to talk about what went, we're going to talk about pretty much everything that went wrong in the game. And we're going to look forward to as well. We're going to look ahead to the Los Angeles Rams game as they come to town, as we're going to see the good old Rams, who looked terrible for a couple games and suddenly look good. But we're going to start like that. So here's some recent news as we get started. This show tonight brought to you by FanEssentials.net. If you like collecting gear from your favorite NFL team, FanEssentials.net is the spot to go. They find the information. They find the goods. They find the gear. So you don't have to. It comes right to your door every month. And whether it's for you, it makes a great gift for a fan of any team that you know. And deals start for just $34.99 a month. Everything's sent right to your door. Now, Rise Up See Red listeners get a special deal. You go to FanEssentials.net, sign up for a month, at least a month, and your promo code that you type in will be CRED. That's, again, CRED. And you will get 15% off your initial purchase. So head on over to FanEssentials.net, check it out, get the Cardinals gear that you're looking for so you don't have to. Cardinals news. Steve Keim announced on the radio, on his radio spot on Monday, that he was going to bring in a whole bunch of players, 9 players to try out, and we have some actual news. Coming out of the game, we knew that Drew Butler hurt, he re-injured his ankle, so it's not only just ankles, it's Achilles, it's his foot. He obviously is kind of incapacitated for a bit. Troy Nicholas, good old Troy. We knew this was going to happen. He got hurt, suffered some sort of wrist injury, and he is on injured reserve. The chatter is from people around, some of the media, is that he is done for the season. The Cardinals cut Cameron Kanade, their undrafted rookie long snapper. They cut 5th-round rookie safety Marquis Christian. They promoted Ifani Moma from the practice squad to replace Troy Nicholas on the roster, and they have not announced yet. They have not made any formal announcements as to who will be the long snapper. However, there is a report out there. What's his name? Eric Weaver? Is that the name? I forget the name. I don't have
Aaron,
it on me.
Aaron something. I should know this. Hold on, I got it right here. Aaron Brewer.
Brewer, the guy who he long snapped the. Well, the last time the Cardinals brought to the team a long snapper formerly of the Denver Broncos, he lasted quite a long time in Mike Leach. So, reportedly, it is Aaron Brewer that the Cardinals have signed to replace Cameron Kennedy. That was a lovely, lovely thing they did for a couple of games. There is no report. They brought in some punters. One is supposed to be signed, I'm sure, by tomorrow, since they'll need someone to practice. And it looks like they're going to keep two punters on the roster, at least until Drew Butler is healed up and ready to go. And so then we got Shaq Riddick gone from the practice squad. They replace him with Cam Johnson. The Marquee Christian cut. That was surprised to some. Well, so, first of all, what are your reactions to the moves? Surprising, not surprising? And what do you think we're going to see moving forward?
I'm not surprised by the – I mean, let's be honest. I said Kennedy should have been cut after the Patriots game. As a guy that long snapped in high school, and that's, you know, that's far off from the NFL. As somebody that long snapped in high school, you're defined – as a long snapper by what you do in like pressure situations. And in the first chance you botch the snap, like that was just an omen that the situation was too big for him as, and it wasn't a physical thing. It wasn't that he's not a good snapper. It's just snapping is a lot mental and, you know, getting excited, being, having too much adrenaline, you know, being scared of the moment, all of those things, they all play into the reality of it. So, you know, I wish Cameron Kennedy well, but I said after the New England game, he should have been cut then. And, you know, I stick by that. Now it's kind of worked itself out. Drew Butler, obviously, it'd be odd if they kept him active more than 2 weeks, unless like, it's not a very significant injury because they can't keep two punters on the roster. They can't keep three kickers on the roster for more than maybe two games, maybe stretching it to three while the new punter gets settled in with Butler, but or with Catanzaro holding. But, you know, it makes sense the fact that they have to get a new snapper in here that they probably want to keep the holder as, you know, keep that the same for as long as possible because they don't want too much change within the routine for Catanzaro, who has been, you know, good but not a great kicker in his career. And so you don't want to change too much right away. Shaq Riddick for Cam Thomas is basically one athlete for another. That's it. Nothing more. Thomas is a pass rusher out of Virginia, long, lean, pretty okay athleticism. So makes sense that they would bring in the same player that they just got rid of, I guess. And, you know, Marquee Christian, that's the one that was surprising to me, but maybe that's a shot across the special teams bow as much as you can take one. I mean, Kennedy and Christian were both brought in to help the special teams units that have been really bad so far. And so they both got, you know, the boot quickly.
And for me, the Christian one, it was surprising on one spot, but not surprising because he'd been inactive all three games. And I think that was more than anything. He was just behind too many guys, even on special teams. I talked to him in the offseason. One of the goals he had, he wanted to lead the team in special teams tackles. He hasn't even been able to play special teams yet, but I guess the kind of the surprise for me is DJ Swearinger. Not only has he played solidly on defense, he's had an important role on special teams as well. And they've got a bunch of guys who they brought Brandon Williams in. They've got Marcus Cooper. He's been playing special teams. And so you've got a number of guys. The numbers game was there. Some fans are asking, well, you've got 18 linemen on the, you know, between the 9 offensive linemen and 9 defensive linemen. Why not just cut number 19 or number 18, one of them? That's always a possibility, except what do we see right now? We've got a banged up offensive line with Evan Mathis. They kept John Wetzel because he was the only really swing tackle. They don't really have a backup tackle. Defensive line, you've got Frosty Rucker out, you've had Kandichi out, and clearly they like the upside of Xavier Williams and Olsen Pierre, because they've kept them around even though they haven't been active. It's kind of interesting how they went. So the move, while it is a little surprising considering how much talk and how much was said and praised that Christian got in the preseason and just after the draft. I mean, he was Adrian Wilson's find. The front office, the personnel department, they loved what he'll be coming out. They said, watch out for Marquis Christian. Coach Arians talked about it all through the preseason and during camp, having a really good camp. And I think that was simply just a numbers game. Now, I happen to know that, you know, if he clears waivers, which I hope he does, he will be back on the practice squad. It'll be kind of the case of Harlan Miller. But it'll be interesting to see. I mean, kind of thing how things are playing out. You know, Kennedy, that was inevitable. Troy Nicholas, whether it was now or those later, he's going to get hurt. So
it's not funny, but it's funny.
It's sad because, I mean, he has a lot of potential, but Cardinals just have the terrible, terrible luck when it comes to drafting tight ends. Rob Housler, who, in fairness to Rob Housler, had a fine final season with the Cardinals, made some play. We had one season that was pretty productive, and then his final season really improved in his blocking and made an impact play basically every single game, but not much more than that. But is it that tight end position doesn't do much? And Nicholas was a number three tight end. I wonder if they're going to change the rotation at all, because they had been doing it. Well, Fells is the one guy on one tight end sets. Gresham and Nicholas on two tight end sets. I wonder if we see that same sort of role flipped around, but instead of Fells in the one tight end sets, that they go with like a guy like Ifeanyi Moma because of the mismatch ability, and then go with Fells and Gresham in the two tight end sets, or if they just stick Moma into the Nicholas role, and hopefully he's improved enough with blocking that he isn't a detriment in those bigger sets, especially when they run the ball.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they now kind of shuffle the offense or the tight end situation. It's always interesting when you go in and you think, wow, this is a strength of a team, and then one injury, and now you go, wow, what's going on with this team? But I guess you can say that about this entire team right now. So maybe that's, you know, maybe that's what it's all about, and not necessarily just the one position. But yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see what Moma does, how much playing time he gets. Nicholas caught, I think, one pass this year. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep. That was it. He caught the one pass for was it like 1 yard on Sunday?
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's been an interesting first couple of weeks.
What I find interesting in the players they brought in, the one thing that surprised me a bit was you saw brought in. So they brought in punters, brought in long snappers. The other position they brought in, inside linebackers. Very interesting sense. Is it
maybe
Minter?
Special teams?
Minter's been
good to me.
And Minter's been fine. You know, Buchanan hasn't been the same so far as last year, but he's productive. Maybe it's looking for someone to replace Gabe Jackson or Alani Fua. Maybe that's the case.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it's another special teams type thing.
Could be.
Like, if they're looking for a specific player on special, I'm going to look. Gabe Martin is who you meant, not Gabe Jackson. Gabe Martin
has
played 17, you know, special team snaps. Alani Fu has played, you know, or that was in one game, sorry, 22. So, like, they are special teams guys, so maybe that's what it is. Maybe they're looking at maybe they have identified those two or one of those guys as being the weaker link on what has been a weak special teams unit so far.
So maybe, you know, the names that came up were some interesting ones. Remember Nate Irving, where the Cardinals looked at before? His name came up again. Apparently nobody liked him that much because he didn't end up, you know, getting signed anywhere. But yeah, that's kind of what's happening.
of the punting situation? I mean, we already said, like, it's going to get resolved. They're going to bring somebody in. But was it weird? Now, they didn't practice today. But wasn't it weird to you that they didn't make a signing today to have that guy in here? I mean, they can bring him in tomorrow. It doesn't make a difference. But, like getting him in into the playbook, understanding the plays, like the punt, you know, what the punt angles that they want, where are they, you know, because, you know, it's not as simple as, like, go back and kick the ball, right? Like, there are, I mean, we like to think it is, but there are some, you know, intricacies to the position. And I just thought it was interesting that the long snapper position got filled, but the punting position, they were like, all right, well, we'll bring them back in tomorrow. Like, was it that they were underwhelmed, or was it that, you know, two of the guys were so close that they're like, all right, we'll do it again tomorrow type. Like, I it's just weird to me because you're talking about a position that, you know, they need filled probably tomorrow at the latest. Like, I you wouldn't want to see it stretch into Thursday and Friday, right?
My guess is, based on when the Cardinals make press releases, it's usually about when they announce moves and roster moves, it's typically on a Tuesday. It's typically about noon, 1 o'clock. So it's early afternoon. Maybe they just hadn't gotten down. Maybe hadn't made decision yet. Cause they brought in several punters.
Yeah.
So they brought in a few guys. Maybe they're still looking at them. Maybe they were just in the negotiations. And so you've got three guys to talk shop to, you know, maybe one wanted more money than another. So I would expect there to be an announcement tomorrow, and I expect that there's already an agreement in place, just like the one, because they didn't announce the signing yet either. They didn't announce the signing of the long snapper either. So that's just out there from Josh Weinfuss. That's just the report that he put out there, that they've come to agreement. So when the original
thing, we know how the Cardinals react to that. They just cut people like Elijah Penny.
That's true. So, but yeah, so we have a report out there. It's just that based on what I was hearing from people, it looks like it'll probably be Quigley. But I expect they'll be in practice tomorrow. Whoever it is, he'll be in practice tomorrow, and then they'll make the announcements afterwards. Or maybe they'll make the announcements before, because reporters will be out being able to see the special teams portion of camp, portion of practice tomorrow. So maybe we'll be able to – yeah, I expect the guy will be there because they'll need to work on punting and probably holding and stuff like that.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting. Like, yeah, I guess they didn't announce the Brewer signing, so, you know, it's basically – doesn't matter. But yeah, it's always interesting to me how they go about these type of things, and like, oh, this is what we're doing. And so
I don't know. So let's move from that and talk about more depressing stuff and about
we're having so much fun talking about new punters.
So yeah, so next up on Rise Up Sea Red, we're going to talk about the Bills game, and we're going to say basically how everything was terrible. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and it's time to talk terrible. The Buffalo Bills run all the basically just out physical, you know, doing they did to the Cardinals what we hoped the Cardinals would do to the Bills, except for the fact that the Cardinals didn't give up. They kept trying. The effort was there. He just couldn't do it. So what went wrong? What went wrong in that game against the Bills? Now, so which was worse, offense, defense, or special teams?
Yes.
Which was worse?
Coaching. Coaching. No. What went wrong? They got off the plane in Buffalo, and then they decided that they weren't going to play a football game. And then they realized, oh, crap, we have to play this football game anyways. And then they thought, okay, well, it's the Buffalo Bills. So eventually they're just going to lay down for us, and we'll be able to be the Arizona Cardinals. And then they realized, oh, crap, we're not really that good right now. So we can't just be the Arizona Cardinals. We have to actually be a good football team, a disciplined football team, and a football team that doesn't make a ton of mistakes. And, I mean, that was basically it. You look at it, you know, I've written about it, I've talked about it, the first three defensive series were fine. I mean, they forced the Bills to punt the first series. The Bills had negative 15 yards on their first series, punted the ball. The Cardinals got the ball at the Bills' 40-yard line and gained 2 yards and quickly punted away. The next series, I think it was like five plays, and then the Bills punted. The Cardinals quickly gained, I think it was 3 yards, and then punted the ball away. And then the next series, the Bills went down and kicked a field goal, and that was basically like the tipping point of the game, because from that point on, Arians, Palmer, and the defense all of a sudden thought, oh, crap, we got to play catch-up. Here we go again. And so you saw it. I mean, I've never seen an instance where a team physically dominates another team defensively on the first two series and then slowly, you know, like the dam starts to just break, and then, you know, by the end of the second half, it was, you know, it had flooded and there was just no hope by that point. Yeah, they made it a closer game, but then you saw the errors with special teams, and then, you know, we all know Carson Palmer, when the going gets tough, he throws interceptions. So that, you know, he tries to throw the team back into the game. And let's just be honest, right now it's a combination that he doesn't look like he has the arm strength. His wide receivers outside of Larry Fitzgerald cannot be trusted. Yeah, Jerron Brown has had two, you know, nice games. John Brown came alive a little bit this week. But, I mean, outside of Larry Fitzgerald, what wide receiver are you looking at on third and seven and going, well, I got to get this guy the ball? You're not. You're going, oh, crap, I got to throw it either to Fitz or David Johnson. Like, those are your only two offensive options right now. And so, you know, you saw he put 50-50 balls up for Michael Floyd and Jerron Brown. And for whatever reason, there was just no desire. There was no fight from those guys to win the ball. Obviously, now we know that Floyd was having some headache and dizziness issues, it sounds like. Jerron Brown's just, I mean, he's a nice wide receiver, don't get me wrong, but if you're throwing the ball up to Jerron Brown in a 50-50 situation, honestly, I would probably take him fourth after Fitz, John Brown, Michael Floyd, before I would throw the ball up to Jerron Brown. Again, that's not an insult to Jerron. That's just the reality of how he plays the wide receiver position. He is not a physical guy that, you know, is going to win the ball in those situations. And, you know, it just it spiraled, right? Like, it just unwound, and I called it the worst performance of the Bruce Arians era. Like, because there were glimmers and glimpses of good. You know, we'll talk about it shortly, but overall, the defense sucked, the offense sucked, and the special teams sucked. So, like, what could you actually say went well in this game from a team perspective?
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was the identity of this team. And I was talking to you about this, you know, before the show. This team has really taken on the identity of Carson Palmer's career. They, when everything is right, they're great. They are not good at adversity unless they'd had success early. It's very weird how mentally this team is. They defensively, they started great. All it took really was one third down pass that Michael Floyd just dropped to really just turn everything around. That it was like, that's an omen. Oh, he dropped. It's going to be one of those games. And then they tighten up, and then the defense plays poorly, and the offense struggles. And then they get behind a lot and they have to rally back, and then they start turning the ball over. I mean, there's just other mistakes. I mean, there's the bad snap on the field goal, which returned for a touchdown. And then you got four fourth quarter interceptions by Carson Palmer. couple of them bad miscommunications, couple of them he's just making trying to do too much. Now, in fairness, I said this about Kurt Warner as well. Kurt Warner was a fantastic quarterback to take you to a lead and win games, but he was not a great quarterback to rally you back because he did the same sort of thing. And there's probably a lot of quarterbacks you can say that about as well historically. Very few can rally you back from multiple score deficits without kind of because they start taking more risks. And Carson Palmer is the perfect example of this. And that's how his career went in Cincinnati. He put up big numbers, but then in crucial moments, he've had turnovers. And that's what we see now. If he's asked to do too much, if he's put in a situation where he's asked to do more than, or he feels he has to do more than he should, it just doesn't go well. It just doesn't go well at all. They don't handle their own adversity well. It was against New England, we saw it. There was a miscommunication in the back end of the defense. Chris Hogan scores that touchdown, and that changed the tone of the game. They weren't as free. They didn't play as – they were tight. It was like they were trying to regather themselves. And then on Sunday – I mean, they didn't have that happen against Tampa Bay because it was just – Tampa was terrible. And so they had things go their way. The Cardinals have to start early. They have to start quickly. When they score offensively early, whether they give up only a field goal and score a touchdown or they get an early lead, then the rhythm starts and then they play confidently. If they get down, they don't play with confidence and they start making mistakes.
And they start pressing, like all of them. And then, and we talked about it, or I talked about it on my show, you know, the wrap-up show a little bit with Tyler, and that they, you know, they start pressing in the sense of like trying to make plays. And we saw it with Tyrann Mathieu in that play. Like, if the offense is doing anything, do you think he tries to pick that ball up and run? Or do you think he just falls on it, tries to roll himself up and run?
Like, I think he still tries to pick it up. That's a Mathieu play. He's trying to make plays. He just failed to do it.
Yeah, see, but I thought it was a good point somebody brought up. Like, he probably felt like he had to score a touchdown because just getting the ball back to the offense wasn't good enough. Whereas, like,
and that's probably true. He probably knew the situation, batted it, and rather than instinctively picking it up, he's trying.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking. Is like, yeah, he probably picks it up. Like, he probably dives on it and rolls and tries to get up and get going again. But, like, that was, like almost like a – and it wasn't worried or anything like that, but it was almost like a crap, I have to get this ball and pick it up because if I don't pick it up and score, our offense is just going to throw another interception. Like, that's kind of what it seemed like now that I go back and look at it and kind of look at the play overall. Like, they need – like, he felt like – our offense sucks, so there's no way they're going to score if I fall on this football, so I better pick this up and get to the house. And, you know, it was one of those things, like you said, for whatever reason, this team, when they get behind early, struggles with adversity.
They're not patient. You look at Seattle. We'll take a couple examples. Seattle and New England and Denver, they never panic. The way they play, they stick to their game plan. You don't see Seattle changing the way what they're doing. They know that, okay, they trust their defense, and so offensively they keep to it and they wear you down. New England does the same thing. There's a quiet confidence. Even if they get down early, they say, hey, we got this, we're going to come back. And they just stick with it. I think it's, you know, it's a Carson Palmer thing. It's a Bruce Arians thing. They get impatient and they try to get things back quickly. And so they're going down the field, taking those downfield shots, and they're not hitting. And, you know, it's hurting them because they get giving the ball back on punts rather than what started happening in the second half. They finally got into rhythm because they were taking the plays that were there. The shorter plays, the run plays, and, you know, they chewed up, you know, 8.5 minutes. They chewed up 8.5 minutes in that drive in the third quarter, and that's really where they got their offensive rhythm. And then after that, it was about risk-taking again. It was bad decisions and risk-taking. So I think that I think it's a combination of two things. That's Bruce Arians as a play caller. He believes, he trusts his offense so much that he can make those chunk plays and turn the game around with the play call. And Carson Palmer does the same thing as well. He sees a play open, or he sees a play that he thinks he can make, or he says, okay, I'm going to trust Floyd down the field to make this play for me. And instead of sticking, okay, let's methodically get back in rhythm. Instead of getting into rhythm methodically, they try to get back into rhythm and confidence with one play. You're muted.
Yeah, I was. it's just been unfortunate through the first couple games that, you know, there's been no steady play. Like, even the Tampa game, it was just a bad first quarter offensively, and then it was really, really high. And then it, like, you know, expectedly petered out at the end. Like, let's be honest, like, we're not going to expect the Cardinals to score, you know, 70 points on a team. Like it petered out, whatever. No big deal. But then they haven't found a way to consistently, like, I you know, 28 points is a good point number. Like, I'm not saying they have to score 7 points in every quarter, but man, it should be nice to have an option to score points in the first quarter.
Yes. Well, especially because of the way they react to things. They're kind of the opposite of last year, the past couple of years. They start quickly, and then they have lulls at the end of halves. And it's successful, like how for their success, they can handle mentally the end of the half lull because they can come back after on the second half and then start again. But when they get punched in the gut, some, you know, they trip and fall down, then they're like, oh, crap. We have to do it. They try too hard. I don't know what it is, but look, offensively, was there a single bright spot that you saw? Because all I saw was, you know, nothing was right. Earl Watford was completely dominated by Kyle Williams, and he dominated everyone he went up against, but it was very noticeable that, again, Kyle Williams and Earl Watford, that there was a definite downgrade from Evan Mathis. David Johnson wasn't great. Fitz, there was a couple of plays he normally would make that didn't. Floyd was bad. John Brown, you know, early wasn't there, and he finally caught some catches in the second half. So I'm a little bit optimistic that we finally get him out of his funk. But really, I didn't see a single positive. There wasn't any bright spot on offense, even though they were able to come back. So they were doing things in the second half. But I think that had more to do with the fact that, you know, Buffalo let them back in the game as opposed to the Cardinals doing something. I think their defensive philosophy changed a little bit, which allowed the Cardinals to move the ball more. And I didn't see a single bright spot offensively, to be honest.
And I was okay with David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald's performances. I think Mike Iupati continues to be very, very good. Outside of that, I mean, it was good to see John Brown make plays. What, 7 catches, 60 yards? That was a nice performance.
6 for 70, I think it was.
Oh, so I had it opposite. Yeah.
It was 760 for Fitz, 6 for 70 for Brown. I think that's what it was.
It's too close. So, but yeah, I mean, it was just one of those things, like, the entire offense looked shell-shocked by what was happening. You know who's been secretly bad, and nobody wants to talk about it? But, you know, me, I'm always open to talk about things. Jared Valdir has not been, like, good through 3 games. I'm trying to see if
they're... Lorenzo Alexander with a sack and a half and lost. What was it? Didn't he lose another sack, too?
Yeah. Where he
Lorenzo Alexander. Yeah, I Zoe is great, but as a pass rusher, come on. If you're giving up three, if he's getting 3 sacks in a ball game against your left tackle, because he lines up against the left tackle. Jerry Hughes is always right tackle side, always.
Yeah.
So that was Lorenzo Alexander
So you expect
Jared Villiers.
Yeah, you expect Jerry Hughes to eat on DJ Humphries because Jerry Hughes is one of the better pass rushers in the NFL. And then Jared Valdir goes out there and just lays an egg against, Lorenzo Alexander. And you look at it and, I don't put a ton of stock into this stuff. But, he's ranked 27th in the NFL by Pro Football Focus. I don't think he's been outside of the top 12 his first 2 years in Arizona. So, and I know it's only a 3-game span and whatnot, but it was just ugly against a Bills team that, again, we talked about it on paper. This should have been a cakewalk. This is a layup. A team struggling with their identity, firing a coach already.
Missing starters.
Missing, they are missing their best offensive weapon outside of Tyrod Taylor. They're missing their best offensive lineman. They're missing their best defensive player. And that's the performance you get? Maybe the Cardinals have to get teams at full strength. Maybe that's the key.
Maybe that's the thing. Maybe that's exactly the thing that they mentally maybe it's the Pittsburgh thing because you see when Landry Jones got in the game, they're like, all right, we got this. And then they didn't, and they played poorly. I don't understand this at all.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Because they haven't done anything. They haven't proven anything other than that they play poorly when it matters. They play poorly if they get off to a bad start. Defensively. Interesting thing, and this has kind of been the trend all year. We are seeing their key players perform well. Patrick Peterson, interceptions, shutting down receivers. Marcus Golden and Chandler Jones are getting sacks. I mean, historically, they've only ever, before this season, only had two players who had a sack in each of the first games of the season. Bertrand Berry, Curtis Greer, two of the best pass rushers we've seen, the Cardinals have. Both Golden and Jones have managed to do that this year. So they're getting sacks. Patrick Peterson's getting interceptions. Kevin Minter and Deion Buchanan, they're getting tackles. Calais Campbell has been, he's played well. But as a unit, they've not been good, especially against the run. They were okay against in yards per carry against New England, although LeGarrette Blount, when it mattered, they couldn't stop him. They couldn't stop LeSean McCoy. They were not stopping Doug Martin, and then he got hurt. Because he even when he left, he had, just over 4 yards of carry. So it's not like they've been making running backs work. They really haven't. And I said this in 2013, kind of how we saw their season go in 2013 and 2014. Their run defense was built to stop the run early until they got a lead. Because if they were out physical, if they had against physical running teams who could continue to pound the ball, they just got ran over. They'd get run over. And then that's the case we saw here. The offense didn't put points on the board early, and so the opposing offense could continue to run the ball. And when they continued to run the ball, the defense was exposed. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the Frosty Rucker not being out there. It's a big difference, but they're just not playing well. They're not playing well against the run, and it doesn't look pretty.
Well, and it's interesting. You and I have had this conversation half a dozen times on this very show, but Josh Morrow and Ed Stinson are really nice role players, but all of a sudden they've become very exposed as not very good. Now that they're having to play a ton of snaps. Then you throw in Rodney Gunter, who seems to have regressed when being asked to play a position other than nose tackle and, do this. And now all of a sudden you have a good right defensive end in Calais Campbell. You have a average to above average nose tackle in Corey Peters. And then you have three guys that are just guys in Ed Stinson, Josh Morrow, and Rodney Gunter. I was very surprised to see Xavier Williams inactive in this game. Especially since we, unless he was hurt. Did you hear that he was hurt?
He wasn't on the injury report all week, so it was
right.
It had to be either a case of effectiveness or game plan, but he played he played well in camp against Tampa. He played really well because he played the Robert Kindici mode. He was based on the number of snaps, I think he was playing the role that Kindici had week one, and he played it well.
And so, you know, you look at it and you go, What the hell's going on? I mean, that there's nothing else you can say about, like, what the hell is going on? Why are Josh Morrow and Ed Stinson getting significant snaps on this defense? And that's not a shot at them. Like I said, they are very talented role players in the NFL, but they are role players. They are guys that come in for 2 to 3 snaps, you know, 10 times a game. They're not guys that come that play 15 snaps and then rode. Like, that's just not their role. They're high energy, high motor guys, and they're not good enough physically. They're much better players than I could ever dream of being, but they're just not good enough physically to win in the NFL consistently, and it's been showing up on game day. They can't stop the run. What has changed on the defense outside of the fact that they have Corey Peters and Ed Stinson or Josh Morrow or Rodney Gunter in? Like, what has changed? I mean, I guess you can say they don't have Rashad Johnson in there. I mean, was he making that big of a difference in the run game? I mean, he's a nice guy, you know.
But now you've got Tony Jeffers. But Tony Jeffers has been playing really well, and he's been making plays.
And so the only thing that makes any sense is that your defensive line has taken 2 giant steps back. And I don't think that –
it appears mental. And it appears to be mental because we're seeing Calais Campbell physically play well.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it must be a mental thing that these guys are not just – they're just not where they're supposed
position.
To be.
Yeah.
Right.
They're not playing well. They're not in the right position. And it's showing up every single week and to the detriment of the team.
Yeah, this talented roster of defensive players – has not been a good defense. They've not played well together. But like I said, they have people producing. So Patrick Peterson is producing. Marcus Cooper produced. Tony Jefferson is playing extremely well. They're getting sacks off the edge. But as a cohesive unit, they have too many mistakes. So there's just enough mistakes that they're not in the right spot. So they give up plays or they can't get off the field. And it's incredibly frustrating. Again, based on what we saw, aside from the first 2-3 series, there weren't any real bright spots to that game. Buffalo really was able to have their way up front, and when they got to the second level, they had the size to be able to neutralize a Deion Buchanan.
Yeah, Buchanan is kind of struggled this year, though. We haven't talked about that very much. I mean, we talked about it a little bit last week, but go ahead.
I was going to say, and I think that points to the line play, especially where does Buchanan play? He plays behind Frosty Rucker. He plays behind that position. So,
but
that they don't again, keep him clean. Like,
yeah, and I get your point. I do. But like, you can't honestly tell me that Frosty Rucker is that integral of a part of a defense that he goes out for 2 weeks and it just becomes a giant S show out there stopping the run, right? Like, he's a very nice player, but he is a completely replaceable entity along a defensive line. And so, like you're saying, so if these guys aren't performing, then it needs to be somebody else in there. And you have Pierre Olson, I can't even remember which way his name goes, Robert Kimdiche and Xavier Williams, all 3 inactive. Pierre's been inactive, I think, 2 of the games. Kimdiche the last 2 games, and Williams this game. You know what? Make Ed Stinson and Josh Morrow inactive and see what happens then. Like, honestly, could it get worse? I know that we're not there in practice and everything, but you can't tell me every week, oh, well, they have a good week of practice and, you know, Kondice needs to play better in practice. And then they come out and they look like garbage on the field and then say, well, you know, Kondice's got to play better. If he's playing that bad that Josh Morrow and Ed Stinson are outplaying him so much that they are getting all the rotation time, then is he even worth, like, keeping around? And I'm obviously using hyperbole here, but, like, you cannot tell me he's playing that poorly in practice.
Maybe. Now, the Morrow thing is an interesting one because they use him for a specific role, and he is their – he's – when they take – when they go nickel, he's their third defensive lineman for the set when they use him. Sort of, it's somewhat, if you had to pick it out, he's the outside linebacker, but it's for certain nickel packages. And so he offers a skill set that the other guys don't. Perhaps a little bit better, a little more stout size-wise against the run. I don't know, but he has a specific role that he is, and he's out there for their, you know, when I chart plays, it's when they go 3-3 as opposed to 2-4 up front.
Right. And that was the thing though. That's, you know, kind of what we thought. Now, not obviously outside, but just rushing the passer, that would be kind of what Kondice was doing, right? Like, we expected him to be in on those similar downs and usages. And so, I don't know, man. Like, it's just – it's frustrating that to see your defense struggling so much against the run, something that they've been so good at in recent years, and you addressed the position to get it younger, more athletic, and then that player is just sitting on the bench every week. So it's just one of those – it's one of those weird situations right now, right?
It is, and special teams. I mean, anything positive about that? I mean, Channel Catanzaro hit that 60-yarder, but when you can't trust your long snapper and you have a one-footed holder out there, that made for the worst possible combination. Bad snap and one-footed holder who couldn't stand up to – couldn't get high enough to pull the snap down to correct it, and then couldn't go after the ball. And I probably was on that play that he further injured his foot, and it caused the issue with his Achilles as opposed to just the ankle problem he was having. You know, Andre Ellington is garbage in the return game. He's unwatchable. Every time he takes a knee in the end zone, I consider it a win. And Kent Summers had a tweet that kind of echoed that. He said, I don't know why any team kicks it out of the end zone against the Cardinals. Because
force him to return a punt or a kick. I would kick everything to one between the five and the one. And like you said, make him make returns. Like, make him go out and make a play, because I don't know if he can do it.
Now we're going to see. The interesting thing is, you know, how are they going to approach the punter situation? It seems that Drew Butler he's Teflon, because, you know, as unproductive statistically as he's been since he's been here, there's absolutely been zero talk of replacing him. So clearly Amos Jones likes what he sees. And when in his one healthy game against Tampa Bay, he kicked the ball really well. But do they treat this like they did with Zacidil? Zacidil was kept on the roster a couple of weeks when he had the groin issue. He was the holder. Then he punted. Then he re-aggravated. Then they put him on injured reserve. And then Butler took over. It's going to be interesting to see how they do this, whether they bring in a punter and then they decide they like him more than Butler and then cut Butler when he's healthy, or if they put him on injured reserve, or if the other guy is just a temporary, because that's going to be interesting to see how that goes. Because Butler, I mean, every fan knows, he is the guy that fans are like, why is he still on the team? Clearly, there's something about the coaching staff the coaches like, because he continues to be here. I mean, they brought in a punter in training camp, but the competition was never close. They brought in the kid, Garrett Swanson, and there was really no competition. They were just bringing in another punter just to punt.
Yeah, just so he didn't get hurt, and then he got hurt. So.
And then he got hurt,
of course. What does it say about Garrett Swanson? Because he's not on an active roster, right? I don't think he is.
No, he yeah.
They thought so much of him that they let him hang around for for 5 weeks, and then we're like, all right, talk to you later, buddy. And then Butler gets hurt, and they're like, well, we need a punter. Let's call up Tim Mastay and Ryan Quigley and see what they're up to. What about that Garrett Swanson kid? Nah, he sucked.
Right, well, we'll go with... we did see. And they already did get burned by the young, specialist undrafted rookie guy. So, yeah. That's... so let's talk about let's move on from, because really there, everything that they could have done wrong, they did. They didn't start well. They turned the ball over late. They just lost every defensive thing that they stopped playing defense. So everything went wrong. So let's hope this changes things. Next on Rise Up Sea Red, we'll talk about the upcoming games against the Rams. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. Next up on the docket is the Los Angeles Rams coming to town, and they look like an awful, awful, awful team. And then they score 37 points against the Tampa Bay Bucks, which sort of cheapens our win. It did cheapen the win that we had against the Bucks.
Yeah,
the Rams can go out and
I thought that was
and do what
win,
they did.
And then the Rams scored 37 freaking points
on like, them
in Tampa Bay. It's one of those things.
So now we get this. The Rams, at least now, the Cardinals have seen the Rams play well. So they saw the Rams play well. They're not going to be looking at an 0-3 team coming, oh, yeah, we got this. And plus, they should still have fresh in their minds how their game last year went when Los Angeles came to town, because it was, aside from the fourth quarter turnovers, it was almost exactly how it went last year. Against the Bills, I mean. They had the turnover early. In this case, it was an early turnover. That was the adversity. Los Angeles, then St. Louis, put points on the board, and the Cardinals are playing catch-up the rest of the way. And then Carson Palmer couldn't connect on passes. So what do we expect this week? Should we be worried or should we expect this team to turn around? Because I think we're at a point now is we don't know what to expect.
Yeah, I mean, I still think this team is good, which shows how dumb I am. But I still think this team is one of the better teams in the NFL. They just haven't shown it. And so maybe it's not fair to expect them. Maybe we're, as a fan base, are unrealistic. And, you know, I hate to say that. Like, they've, you know...
They did play toe-to-toe with the Pats team that apparently is unbeatable. They shut out the Texans. They shut out the Texans with Jacoby Brissett. I'm going to see this. Bill Belichick is going to play Julian Edelman all game at quarterback, and they're going to win a game. I don't know how it's going to happen. They don't make sense. So that loss isn't a bad loss. That's an understandable loss, especially since they had a handful of mistakes that one of those mistakes goes away, they win that game. They dominate the Buccaneers, but then this Bills game, if they had beaten New England, then the Bills loss is just the hiccup. That's the Pittsburgh game. That's the LA, that's the St. Louis game from last year. So it becomes the hiccup. But now having lost to be 1-2, it looks in some ways worse than it is, even though when you play as poorly as you do against a team that's bad, because Buffalo's a bad team. They are. I mean, they're a bad team.
They are.
They played so there's no way to go around this. They played poorly. That causes reason for concern when they come home. Now, obviously, it's a home game. Obviously, it's a division game. And obviously, it's a rematch. It's a revenge game. But what can we expect? Todd Gurley got back on track. I mean, and they haven't stopped the run, so Todd Gurley? Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you expect? I expect this team to rebound. I really do. Like, I don't think they're going to rebound like they did against Tampa, but I think they're going to come out and win this game like 31-13, 31-17 type stuff. Like, it's going to be a multiple score win. And Honestly, if it's not, I think you begin to wonder about the long term of this team, this iteration of the Arizona Cardinals. You know, and we'll talk about it more next week because I don't want to talk about it right now. But like, like if this team loses or, you know, squeaks by or, you know, has to pull one out the last second, I think everything that we thought before the season started goes out the window and we have to just reassess the whole thing, right? Like we have to look at it like this is a team that has some talent but doesn't know how to play right now. So they're basically, like you said, they're the 2013 version of the Arizona Cardinals. They're not the 2014 version that was devastated by injuries, and they're not the 2015 season that just ran into a juggernaut. They are, right now, the 2013 version of the Arizona Cardinals. They have talent that just hasn't meshed together. Because remember, Todd Bowles' first, what, seven games in Arizona were not great. And, you know, obviously we all remember Carson Palmer's first eight games in Arizona. So I think we're kind of at that point, like, all right, is this team, is this the Arizona Cardinals we all expected to take the next step and be in the Super Bowl? Or is this the Arizona Cardinals where, you know, Father Time is catching up with their most important player in Carson Palmer? Bruce Arians is going to be the last person to realize that. And now, hasn't made the right adjustments type yet, or was that just, you know, the freak Palmer going Carson Palmer game and it wasn't, you know, who he is as a quarterback anymore? I think those are all legitimate questions, and that's why I think if they come out and they blister the Rams, you look at it and go, okay, everything's good. But if they come out and they squeak by, or God forbid, start the season 1-3, I think you take a step back and you go, okay, what is this team? Like, are they as good as we thought? Or did, you know, did that window – yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
And, you know, Case Keenum isn't even Tyrod Taylor. No, Tyrod Taylor is a good quarterback. He's a dangerous quarterback.
He's a nice quarterback that is tricky to defend.
But Case Keenum. Hey, at least it's not Nick Foles, because Nick Foles is a really, really bad matchup for the Cardinals. So at least there's that. Look, there is a silver lining here. They're not playing Nick Foles. So there's that. But they are going to struggle. I mean, they've got Todd Gurley. That's a matchup that really – that worries me a little bit. And I don't want to – I want to say that the Cardinals are going to bounce back and should win by, you know, a couple of scores, except I've been wrong
all season. We both have. We haven't called.
What? I said the Cardinals, they should win by 10 to 14 points over the Patriots. They should. That's what they should have done. Then, based on what we saw, I said, oh, we both thought it was going to be.
We both thought the defense
Tampa was going to be more of a problem.
Yeah.
And then last week, I thought, oh, they should score early and roll. I clearly don't know anything about the Cardinals. Sorry. I probably shouldn't have said that on the air. Yeah, pretend I know something about the Cardinals. I write, and I think I do. But
well, no, we just don't know anything. Nobody knows anything about this team. You cannot find one single person that
understands what's going on.
Well, yeah, that you would have talked to before. I mean, Kent Summers, Darren Urban, Mike Jarecki, like Gambo, Burns, like all of these guys. You talk to them before the season starts, and you say the Cardinals start out 1-2. They're going to go, ha, ha, yeah, right.
We were talking 7-0.
And you throw in that caveat of no Tom Brady, no Gronk, no Ninkovich. They get Buffalo fires their offensive coordinator, has no Cordy Glenn, no Sammy Watkins, and no Marcell Dareus. And I tell you, those are the two games they lose. You would think I was on crack. Like, you'd be like, no way. And they were just out, not just outplayed, they were out disciplined, they were out physicaled. Like anything that you can throw, any adjective that you can throw in there, like nobody saw that coming because everybody assumed that the offense that stayed together was just going to continue to roll, and everybody assumed that the defensive moves that they made were just going to make this team better. And it has been the complete opposite. The offense sucks. They can't get anything going consistently. And the defense couldn't stop you or I at running back right now for whatever reason. And all of a sudden, you know, we were legitimately having a conversation 3 weeks ago about whether or not the Arizona Cardinals would end up in the top five offensively and defensively. Now I wonder if they'll end up in the top 15 of both categories.
This is a very, very strange year so far. And you look, and then you look at the league. You got a 3-0 Philadelphia Eagles team. What? And I'm like, come on. No. Carson Wentz is going to be good. He's not going to be that good early. You've got Minnesota Vikings, no Teddy Bridgewater, no Matt Khalil, no Adrian Peterson. They're 3-0. The Baltimore Ravens are 3-0. The Philadelphia Eagles completely just destroyed the Pittsburgh Steelers, who look unstoppable before last week. This league doesn't make any sense at all. It doesn't.
No, it doesn't. That's what we say every week. Football's dumb.
Football is dumb, and I don't know why we watch it. It doesn't make any sense. So what I see, if you look at the defense, the Rams defense has looked great in one game and not good in two other games. So they looked completely overmatched by Blaine Gabbert and Carlos Hyde against San Francisco in week one. They completely dominated the Seahawks in week two. And then they gave up 32 points to the Bucs team, who turned the ball over five times against the Cardinals. So what defense are the Cardinals going to be facing? Or maybe if we look at it this way, let's look at the team that Chip Kelly's got a good offensive team. They are not a super physical team. Seattle is still a super physical team up front. Tampa's not, which tells us the Cardinals should be able to put up points against that Rams defense. They are weaker in the secondary than they have been in years past. They still have a very stout front, but they appear to be built to stop the Seattles and not the other teams.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I think, like, I still am not convinced that the first 3 weeks actually happened, like legitimately. And that's what my issue is, because you look at what the Rams have done being the division leaders at 2-1, my goodness. And like you said, they dominate Seattle physically. They lose, they can't score on a soft San Francisco team. And then they go out and play, you know, arena football with the Tampa Bay Bucks. Like, their team makes no sense. They've won in two different ways and lost in a completely different way. Who are they? Well, they're the division leaders, and this is as much as a must-win game as you can have in the first four games of a season, because you're talking about a game against the division leaders, and you're talking about basically becoming three games back with a loss, because you're two in the loss column and they have then the first tiebreaker of head to head. So, you know, they all of a sudden have to make up basically three games until that next Rams game, which is the last game of the season. And we talked about this to start the year. Like, we were thinking the last Rams game of the season was like that third loss, fourth loss of the season, because they had locked up the NFC West. And
right.
They were going to sit players to not have to worry about knees and ankles and bones being broken. And now we're talking about the fourth game of the season could possibly define what this season is for the Arizona Cardinals. I just don't understand it. The Cardinals roll 31-13. I can't even talk about it anymore. Because it doesn't make any sense.
So let's go with that. So here is your ray of light. The Cardinals are going to come back, and they're going to look good, and we're going to make Jeff Fisher look stupid, because that's what we want to do, and the Cardinals are going to be fine, and then they're going to have a sand game in San Francisco, and they're going to be fine there. And yeah, so that sounds good. So let's wrap that up. Let's wrap the show like that. So after all of this yuck, we're going to go under the assumption the Cardinals bounce back. There was reason to be concerned, reason to think, but there's too much – There's too much that there's too much at stake. Division games at home are must wins. The Cardinals know how to win must wins. Let's just hope let's hope Todd Gurley doesn't get hurt or somebody else gets that Aaron Donald gets hurt, because then they'll play poorly. So Rand's going to go in healthy. The Cardinals are going to dominate, and then we'll have a much better show to talk about next week. How's that sound?
Sounds great. I think we'll be back next week. Talking about the 2-2 Cardinals we'll be doing a solo show while I try to figure out what's going on in the world.
So this will wrap up the latest edition of Rise Up Sea Red. We talked Cardinals. This is our doomsday show, even though it's not quite doomsday. It's approaching that way. That's Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. I'm Jess Rip from CardsWire.com. You can find our show if you're listening. Obviously, you know how to find your show because you're listening. But we are on iTunes. Subscribe on iTunes. We're on Stitcher Radio. We're on Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red. We're on Twitter at Rise Up Sea Red. You can find us at RevengeOfTheBirds.com, CardsWire.com, on Blog Talk Radio, and also on Sports360AZ.com. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, and hopefully we're talking about a 2-2 Cardinals team a week from now.
Have a good night, everybody.